Trump's failed coup, Morrison and McCormick try on Trumpery, and the good news is about ply scrapers. This is The Week on Wednesday. Hello and welcome to The Week on Wednesday. I am Ben Davison. With me, as always, is the phenomenal, the fantastic, the bringing me chicken salad for lunch, Van Badham.
You deserve it.
Oh, thank you. This is our take two. The first take was an hour and a half of us ranting and railing, but unfortunately for you and for us, it was totally contaminated with whippersnippers and lawnmowers and people cutting down bits of tree in the neighbourhood.
So, as you guys know, we live in the country, and where we live is very wet, and when the sun's shining, everyone's out with the mower. And now the skies are overcast, we can probably do this show without the...
Try as I might, I could not clean it up. So here we are. We're going to punch through this really quickly. Van, tell me what's going on with Trump's failed coup in the US.
Okay, so there was a coup in the United States in America that fortunately did not come off. Donald Trump, terrible president. Terrible president, obviously lost the election to Joe Biden by 8 million votes.
Huge number of votes.
It's like the largest popular vote margin in history. Biden, of course, won the 306 electoral votes that gave him the majority. He won swing states like Georgia and Arizona. He is going to be the president of the United States on the 20th of January. Trump didn't like this. Trump always said that he would claim that the election was rigged if he didn't win. He claimed that when he was running against Hillary Clinton 5 years ago. And, of course, he has been claiming since the results were known early in November that that the election was rigged. 60 lawsuits his people have brought to the courts. They lost all but one of them. And the lawsuit they won was that Republican scrutineers could stand a little closer to the ballot box to watch themselves lose. In Georgia, they did like three counts of the vote. Georgia was obviously long-term conservative state. There's been, since Stacey Abrams lost her challenge to be governor of Georgia in the 2016 elections, Stacey Abrams was the first Black American woman to ever head a major party ticket for governor of any state. She lost because there was unbelievable voter suppression. 1.4 million people, the Republican administration of Brian Kemp, then the Attorney General, who went on to become the governor. So, and rather than just concentrate on her own career ambition, Stacey Abrams made the commitment to organise Georgia and turn it around, and unbelievable.
Delivered Georgia for Biden.
Unbelievable.
And two Democratic senators.
And two Democratic senators. Yep. Not only two Democratic senators from the Deep South, but one is a Black man and one is a Jewish man. And historically, that's an amazing thing to have happened. So that Senate election happened on January 5th. On January 6th, what's supposed to happen is there's supposed to be a procedural, performative, gestural, ritual opening of the electoral votes from the various states.
Yep.
So America, as we know, has one of the oldest constitutions that is currently in practice on Earth.
Yep.
So most modern democracies...
You have an election, somebody takes power, you move on. America, there's a whole
process. America, because it's still rooted in the 18th century, many of their rituals, they don't directly elect the president. It goes to an electoral college on each state. Everybody knows this now because we're all obsessed with it. And then they're sent, they have another day where they all go, yes, I certify the election, I am the elector. And then they send their votes to Washington in envelopes. They're put into wooden boxes. And there's this ritual where, does anybody have any problem with this? And sometimes people... And you go, no, yes, I do. And then they get struck down. There's footage of this on the internet. You can watch it. It's procedural.
It's quite funny in a way. Al Gore doing it for George W. Bush when Al Gore lost by like 500 votes in Florida.
Al Gore.
And had to then read them out because
Vice
president.
So if you're the vice president of the United States, you're president of their Senate chamber.
Yeah.
And if there's a...
Al Gore made a joke of it when he had to do it for George W. Bush.
Oh, can you think of anything more humiliating than losing the 2000 election to George W. Bush and having to read out the electoral votes that sealed your fate?
But instead of, kind of being jovial with it and trying to keep the flame of democracy alive, Donald Trump... put Pence in this position.
So Pence, who's the vice president of the United States, had to read out these votes. And since he lost the election, Trump has grown more and more unhinged. I mean, his hinges were never really on, but the door has long fallen off the jamb at this point. So what's happened is he insisted that there'd been mass electoral fraud, and who could possibly vote for Joe Biden apart from 81 million people? And, you know, these crazy lawsuits that keep getting struck down. He, and by Trump judges, by judges he appointed.
Yeah, no, we get it.
So what happened was he started putting pressure on Mike Pence and developed this insane theory that Pence had the capacity to overturn the vote because he would be presiding over this.
His job is literally just to read out what's on the letter and say, does anybody object? They go through a procedural motion.
And there's a capacity to object because, you know, that country's 250 years old. And once upon a time, it was like the wheel fell off my cart while I was carrying the votes and they weren't certified on time. And all these crazy things in America, like even when they have their elections, is based in some kind of strange
agrarian calendar.
Agrarian calendar. And it, for an objection to be heard, so what happens is it's a joint session of Congress. So that's the House of Representatives, the Congress and the Senate come together. The vice president presides. They read out the thing and, you know, that's certified. In order for an objection to be heard, you need a congressperson and a senator. Yep. And usually senators are more powerful, slightly more responsible, and just, you know, even if they're on the side that lost, just knock all the objections down. Not under Donald Trump, because, of course, Donald Trump has lost the election. That means there's going to be a new Republican candidate, or at least other new Republican candidates in 2024 when they get another chance to swing at the presidency. And there are a couple of senators who really want to be president. One of them is Josh Hawley from Missouri. One of them is Ted Cruz from Texas, the most un-Texan Texan I think I have ever encountered. And I've spent quite a bit of time in Texas. Ted Cruz. So those two decided that they would make a big deal out of, you know, pursuing election integrity. Let's remember their votes were counted like 11 billion times in Georgia and by hand and by machine. And Biden, in every scenario, Biden wins by 11,000 votes. So they decided that they would support this nonsense, knowing full well that the numbers were on site, that
they were not going to be able to successfully object.
They were not going to be able to successfully object, which is why they took the risk that they could agree to this circus of objection.
The Democratic majority in Congress would prevail,
and because senators tend to be not as loony as congressional representatives in the Republican Party, that sanity would prevail. Yeah, well, sanity might have prevailed among some Republicans in the Senate and some in the House, not a majority. And the majority of Republicans in the House supported this nonsense, which is scary and terrifying. Meanwhile, Trump was outside having called a rally to his supporters via Twitter saying, turn up in Washington, we're going to take it up to Mike Pence, and quote, it's going to be wild. So thousands of people came from all across America. And what was interesting about them, Ben, what was interesting about the kind of people who were turning up in Washington to protest? Were they oppressed blue-collar workers?
No, these were very much your middle-class, white-collar and above in terms of socioeconomic status. You had people turn up in private jets.
Mm-hmm.
You had people turn up with vast arsenals at their disposal.
So we saw small business owners, CEOs, lawyers, teachers.
Chuck Norris, I saw military.
I don't know if it's confirmed, but Chuck Norris does have weedy, weedy conservative beliefs. But like all kinds of...
This is a well-heeled Trumpist.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So there was some interesting research done by our friend Kos Semeras that was shared on Twitter the other day, where he talked about the more assets you owned, the more likely you were to be a Trump voter.
Yeah.
So this whole illusion about, you know, the oppressed, starving masses gravitating towards Trumpism, as it is, not so. And let's remember, Joe Biden is a union man, and the states that were swing states were pretty heavily union states. So happy news for our side. Anyway, so thousands of people converge on Washington. They bring Molotov cocktails. They bring guns. They bring knives. They bring bear spray. Mm. They bring zip ties or restraints. Mm. They bring all of this paramilitary equipment because heaps of them are paramilitary and heaps of them are Proud Boys and heaps of them are Three Percenters, which is a militia, and heaps of them are Oath Keepers, which is another militia. And all these jumped up conservative lunatics with middle class jobs and the money to spend on guns and ammo converge on Washington. Trump comes out and is like, we're going to march on the Capitol and I'm going to march with you, which he does not do. He runs straight to the White House. Don Jr., the disappointing son, is like, yeah, you know, if you're not a hero today, you're a zero and we're going to shove it up these people in Washington. Rudy Giuliani, Rudy, I fart in court appearances, Giuliani, decides he's going to go a bit Game of Thrones and suggests they're going to turn it into trial by combat, you know, and it's all of these Republican cranks who are using totally inflammatory language. And of course, the crowd does go to the Capitol building. They do storm the building. They break open doors. They smash windows. They crawl in. They're scaling walls. And it is crazy. And they attack the police. There's unbelievable footage of these rioters stabbing police with American flags. It is surreal.
And, of course, one of the five people who died was a police officer who was bludgeoned to death with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
And this is a police officer who had written in support of Trump to their local congressman to oppose his first impeachment. Now that we're in the second, we have to call it the first impeachment, I suppose, who was murdered by these people.
Like, he was murdered, actually murdered, and in the worst possible way, having his head caved in with repeated blows from a fire extinguisher. But there were cases of police who were sprayed with bear spray. You know, that you use in a bear attack and all of these crazy. And you saw, we all saw the footage. They were looting, they were destroying things. People pooed in the halls of Congress. They smoked joints, they smashed things up, they took things from Nancy Pelosi's office. I mean, it was gross.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing
and
was.
And violent and seditious.
And treasonous.
Yeah.
Like, in a democracy, if you don't like who's been elected, you organise and campaign to be the people elected next time.
Like what happened in Georgia.
Like what happened in Georgia, which is exactly the model that Stacey Abrams demonstrated to the world. You know, don't get mad, get elected.
Yep.
And, you know, this madness overtaking the building. And, of course, security did get Nancy Pelosi out and they got Mike Pence out. And all of these frantic phone calls were being made from congressional representatives and senators going, what on earth is going on? Like, where is the protection? How did these people get into the building? Because let's all remember, when there were Black Lives Matter protests in Washington, there was the National Guard deployed. There were, like, armed police everywhere. They were protecting the Lincoln Monument, which, by the way, commemorates the leader who abolished slavery, not really a target of Black Lives Matter protesters. You know, there was the gassing of peaceful protesters in Lafayette Square so Trump could get that weird photo op with an upside-down Bible. And
which is satanic, by the way.
Which is totally satanic, by the way. Bit of a dead giveaway for what might be going on there.
Yeah.
And so you've gone from this heavily militarized police presence when there were black social justice protesters to, well, seriously overwhelmed, understaffed Capitol Police response to the white right-wing
militias. And the footage of them opening the gates.
And there's footage
police
of
police officers from other jurisdictions showing their badges to get in, apparently. Yeah. All this sort of
so
stuff.
So what we know is there's definitely been, and like, at least sympathisers in some of the police ranks, because there were cops getting selfies with treasonous rioters, seditionists.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, as this is going on, you have the congressional representatives and the senators, you know, being frantically trying to get protected by the security services that are there.
Yeah.
There's that unbelievable footage of that black police officer. And if you haven't seen the footage, find it, of him running through the halls of the Capitol on his own and was literally using his black body as bait to these crazy white people in order to misdirect them away from the Senate because he knew the Senate chamber hadn't been secured. And, you know, the Senate security were pushing furniture against the doors and it was just complete madness.
His commitment to his duty and his responsibility where he's putting his life on the line with what is essentially a crazed mob, compare that to what we saw Trump and some of the other Republicans doing, which is abandoning their duty to democracy, essentially, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, this is what's come out, is that it's not a question of just a couple of sympathetic police. Trump was told about the breaches and did nothing for 90 minutes. And it was only when an argument was reportedly made to him that he was making himself legally liable for what was going on that he allowed the National Guard to be called. But the FBI has since come out and said that they had profiled what was happening. They knew what the security risk was on January 5th. They were trying to warn people about what was going on. So the intelligence was there. And the thing was, these seditionists were organising visibly. They were organising on Facebook. They were organising in social media communities. They were sharing maps. Someone provided them with maps. They found offices that people who've worked in those buildings for years wouldn't know how to find. Yeah, like the parliamentarian. The parliamentarian is the person who organises the business and is responsible for these sort of ritual votes and ceremonies.
We call
them
the clerk.
So their office, which is not on a... I don't think it's properly on
the
a
tourists
map.
Tourists don't go there.
Tourists don't go there. And most Congress people don't go there either. But the rioters knew where that office was. It was trashed, and they were clearly trying to get their hands on the boxes full of the electoral votes with this insane idea that all they had to do was interrupt that vote and then Trump would be president forever and we could all live in Mary Poppins' crazy right-wing land.
They'd all go back to their professional jobs and semi-professional jobs and everything would be fine.
And get back on their private jet and fly away. Well, it doesn't work that way. Like, if you take up arms against a democratically elected government in a country of laws, generally you get prosecuted for those actions. And of course, now there's been this, you know, absolute outcry about why was there a security failure? How did they get in? What the hell was going on with the police? There have been resignations. You know, where were the intelligence failures and who helped them out is the big question. One of the leaders of these demonstrations made a video bragging that with the names of three congressional representatives who'd helped him out on this riot. So it seems that there was quite a lot of collaboration going on. And of course, when you've got people who are willing to participate in the Sedition Caucus in terms of the vote, it's not a huge leap to think they might be helping out some of their heavily armed, crazy right-wing voters and friends.
And we should remember that the votes happened after the riot.
Well, this is the thing. So
people still voted in the seditious manner, even after the violence, and people were killed and all the rest of it.
Well, and this is the thing. But both Mitch McConnell, who's the Republican chair of the Senate, or leader, the House Majority Leader in the Senate, and Nancy Pelosi, who's, of course, the Speaker of the Congress, they were like, we're having this vote. It does it. Violence notwithstanding, we have to project the strength of the state and we will have the vote. Yep. But you still have these seditionists vote against the certification of results on no evidence. There is no 60 cases brought before courts, no instances of fraud or anything like Trump is claiming. So one of the things that we do, like, and there are all of these really horrific details about what was going on. There were Republicans from the Sedition Caucus who refused to wear masks when they were all in lockdown, and one of them was COVID positive and has given coronavirus to three of the Democrats who they were trapped there with, who are unhappy with this, as you can imagine. Given that one of them is a 75-year-old cancer survivor who's been working remotely from Washington to avoid coronavirus, but Republicans got a Republican, seditionists got a sedition. So that was going on. The FBI are now picking up all of the rioters. There's been this amazing effort online, ordinary people and digital security experts and stuff, identifying who these people are. Because, like I said, they film themselves. They were taking selfies.
We've all seen the photo of the man carrying off the speaker's podium, smiling and waving. And
that guy's in jail.
Yeah, well good. And the Jamiroquai wannabe, with the Viking horn standing at
Us, tell us about what happened at his court appearance, Ben. Tell us what happened to Jamiroquai right-wing horn man.
So this guy is apparently a failed actor, and his mum turned up at the court appearance to argue that he's suffering terribly because he'll only eat organic food and the prison won't serve him organic food and he really needs to be released on this basis. You know, this is the worst defence of a treasonous seditionist I think I've ever heard in my life.
But do you know that they've given in?
Have they really?
Yeah.
They've released him?
No, they're giving him organic food.
Oh, they're giving him organic food.
The judge is giving him organic food.
Oh, good.
I'd like to point out this is in contrast to all the Muslim people who were picked up by ICE, which is their, you know, secret
immigration
customs, who were given an option of out-of-date halal food or pork when they were in custody. And these are people who hadn't actually committed any acts of violence or treason, but were being held up for like visa infringements and things like that. It's a little bit of hypocrisy. You can imagine it's interesting for someone like me, who is a feminist on the internet, who's been told by these type of people for years to screw my feelings snowflakes and whatever. The idea of, you know, fascist Jamiroquai crying in court because they won't give him an organic powerball is just...
It's
screw your feelings, man.
Yeah, because at the same time, here's a guy who participated in an action that not only killed a police officer but killed many of the seditionists as well, not through police action, not through the defence of the state by the state, but one woman was trampled to death.
Yeah, woman in her 30s was trampled to death by the... She was riding and she was trampled to death by other riders.
You know, and some of them clearly overestimated their own physical capability and one had a stroke and one had a heart attack, tased himself in the
genitals. The other weird detail about them, yeah, the guy tasing himself in the genitals.
Oh,
it's hard to have sympathy for that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, on a biological level, we probably should, but also no. So...
But there's no solidarity here. You got fascist Jamiroquai demanding to be released from prison because he wants
by his mum,
because he wants his organic, what did you call
wheat
it?
Ball,
power
whatever,
ball.
I don't know.
At the same time, as not only did they trample people, but you were telling me the story about the woman who was shot by security personnel.
Oh, this is horrific. So this woman, Ashley Babbitt, who was an Air Force veteran, and this is what we mean about, you know, the demographics of these people. Not only did they skew sort of middle class and professional, they also skewed older. Like, Ashley wasn't that old, but people said it was bizarre. It was like watching your parents engage in a riot.
Yeah.
You know, like there's grandpa and some Molotov cocktails. And the two guys who died there, one died of a stroke and one died of a heart attack. And the theory was they got overexcited. But when Ashley Babbitt was breaking into one of the chambers, punching through the glass, and the security shot her.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, which is horrific and horrendous and shouldn't happen. But also,
that's the
armed protesters breaking into a parliamentary building shouldn't happen. But the worst thing is there is footage of Ashley Babbitt having taken the bullet, bleeding out of her neck on the ground, and the other riders aren't helping her. They're filming her with their mobile phones. They're filming her die. And it's this surreal image of this woman sort of saying, oh, I'm all right, while she bleeds out of her neck, lit by the glow of several mobile phones around her.
And this is what I mean by the lack of... This is not a movement of solidarity. This is not a movement that's designed to lift each other up, to help form, as they say in the United States, a better union. This is deranged. This is people in it for themselves, people who've substituted reality for belief systems to the point where their own fame or infamy are interchangeable concepts to them clearly. Online is more important than the life of one of the people who has come to participate in the action with them, as wrong as I think that action is.
They were talking about hanging Mike Pence. Mike Pence, who is notorious Trump sycophant, who wouldn't even let... So, because a lot of the Republican senators, they're political operatives, and they don't care if the leader is Donald Trump or a bunch of daisies. You know, if it gets them elected and keeps them in power, they'll go along with it.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a lot of backchat and, oh, would you believe this guy that's gone on? And Mike Pence would never stand for it. Like, he was devoted to the president.
Yeah.
And that devotion resulted in him having to do, he had to do his duty. He legally had to read out the votes that were there and not accept those objections. And they had a noose erected outside the Capitol building and were demanding to hang Mike Pence. And of course, Trump was encouraging this kind of inflammatory language. Oh, you know, Mike Pence's courage has failed, blah, blah, blah. And was refusing to speak to him, didn't call Mike Pence to see how he was after the, you know, domestic terrorism sedition emergency that was resulting in deaths in the Capitol building.
So let's talk about the repercussions for Trump, because I think this is important now. You know, we've all seen the footage. People have died. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger made a video talking about the importance of democracy.
And you must watch the Schwarzenegger video. It's surprisingly moving.
40 million people have watched it. I watched it last night for the first time. I was late to it myself, but it is really worth the 8
really
minutes.
Really worth it.
So let's talk about now what's going to happen to Trump. For him and his facilitators, and then let's talk about if there's any other repercussions for him.
Okay, so number one is this is brand damage.
Yep.
Like, it's 75 million people may have voted for Trump, but they didn't all go to Washington and write. And
it was only a couple of thousand people, right?
It's only a couple of thousand people, but it was enough to overwhelm the police.
Yeah.
Intriguing. It'll be very interesting to find out what happens there. Politically, what this means is it's a headache for the Republican Party, because the way that the Republican ranks have grown with the Trump effect.
Yep.
So all these people who either didn't used to vote or sort of grudgingly voted Republican got very enthusiastic and mobilised by Trump and became very active Republicans. And that's how you've ended up with all these Congress people who are first-time Congress people who are light in the eyes, QAnon, Trumpy people.
Yep.
So the issue is that a lot of Republicans think that they couldn't survive the primary process, which is their term for pre-selection, based on who Trump has brought into the party.
Yep.
And Trump has weaponized primary votes and has threatened to do this as well against Republicans who oppose him.
And his children are on social media talking about doing it as well.
Yeah, and there are rumors that the Trump children, like the rumor is that Ivanka Trump will run for the Senate in Florida and things like that. So Trump candidates might have that advantage. At the same time, Trump doesn't represent any traditional Republican values: duty, responsibility, accountability, transparency, you know, cautiousness,
family,
conservatism, you know, respect for institutions, family, like
service.
None of these things. He thinks the military are suckers and losers. He pays off porn stars who he cheats on when his wife is pregnant.
We all know about
Trump. We know it all. And so, the traditional Republican establishment, like, they see Trumpism as a cancer on their movement and a cancer on their party, which is why you get those Republicans who want him out. They may have gone along with it to a point, but he's a lame duck president. He is not going to be president after the 20th of January. So a power alignment realignment is going to go on. But what do you do if you're someone like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and you've got presidential ambitions and you want to pick up, you're unscrupulous enough to want to pick up the Trump voters? You're fist pumping the air, saluting the rioters, and you're pushing these ridiculous decertification motions. And there's this huge division in the Republican Party. And you know, when any kind of movement is having that kind of drift towards extremism, purity tests get really important. So, you know, there's a lot of division about how to respond to Trump. So Cindy McCain, the wife of former Republican presidential candidate and long-term Arizona senator and war hero John McCain, has just been formally censured by the Arizona Republican Party for not being Republican enough.
I mean, this is insane, right? But so she's being censured at the same time as there are Republicans refusing to censure or impeach or remove Trump.
Oh, right? Yeah, they want unity and healing. So all these people are trying to sort of ride both trains at once. It's terrible what happened at the Capitol, but we need unity and healing, so we should just not talk about it and move on. What's the point in punishing Trump? What's the point about getting his supporters offside? And then you hear things like a Republican congressman who voted to certify the election results, who backed in Biden, which he really morally, legally and institutionally was obligated to do, wrote an op-ed for a newspaper that talked about another Republican congressperson who was a freshman senator and new to the job, who was crying as she voted against certification, and who was like, "What are you doing?" And she was like, "I know it's wrong, I know it's a lie, but I'm scared for my family, so I'm going to vote against it." And they're the kind of dynamics that's going on. So the Republicans can't really risk Trump staying in the party and having that kind of influence. So there's an appeal to impeach him, because if he's impeached, he can't run again in 2024. But he can only be he'll be impeached in the House because the Democrats have the majority, and the Democrats have said they were going to do it. But the Democrats need Republican votes to back them in the Senate to get him impeached, which will strip him of office, kick him out, and prevent him from running again.
So you would think that there are some Republicans who are perhaps vulnerable to a Trumpian challenge, looking for other Republicans who are perhaps less vulnerable to cross over and vote with the Democrats. And I'm thinking here, Senator from Utah is someone.
Mitt Romney. Yeah, Mitt Romney doesn't give a damn what Donald Trump thinks. So
he'll be somebody who might end up voting for impeachment. But that's not enough by itself, right?
No, but Mitch McConnell, who's like a Republican right-wing conservative monster.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like a terrible human being.
Yeah, corporate tax cuts before universal health care, thank you very much.
Yeah, and stimulus checks, shmimulus checks. So he has said that he thinks Trump committed impeachable offences. He's not saying he's voting for impeachment. impeachment. He's not saying people shouldn't vote for impeachment. He's not saying people should vote for impeachment. He's just saying that they were impeachable offences. Yep. So you get the feeling there's some frantic numbers being done and calculations about electoral opportunities being made and whether it's worth taking an electoral hit in the next couple of years and counting on people to forget Trump. And because once, generally with authoritarian movements, when the leader is made out to be a loser, which is what will happen on the 20th of January, a lot of their power disappears.
Yeah.
But it's about how much money do the Trumps have to fuel the primary process. These are the kind of...
Well, it's interesting you raise money, right? Because this is the other thing now that's happening is that Trump is going to start to suffer some financial consequences.
You're loving this, aren't you?
Oh, I think it's great, you know, because when capitalism supported Trump, right? Capitalism created Trump, whether it was stopping him from going bankrupt in the 80s or funding his campaign through various mechanisms, even though he claims it was self-funded.
By his dad.
He is a product of the capitalist system. So if the capitalist system is turning against him and Deutsche Bank has said they're not going to do business with him anymore.
City of New York is pulling money from all these contracts
they have
with
him. This is like $17, $18 million a year worth of income for him. And of course the one that really hurts him as a human, if I can put it like that.
Is he human? Yeah. Is he really? He looks like one. Sort of.
Well, sort of. As a giant tangerine ball. The thing
with the ferret on his head
that hurts him the most is that the PGA, Professional Golfers Association, has removed the 2022 championship from a Trump golf course. This is a president who spent over 300 days of his single term presidency at golf courses. He's apparently
his own
distraught.
Golf courses.
His own golf courses, of course. He's apparently distraught by this. So it's money, it's denying him access to the things that he
loves.
And
the big corporate donors who fuel the political machine in America, they are pulling their money from Republicans. Not just from Trump, but...
From the Sedition Caucus, right?
Yeah, from the Sedition Caucus. So you have companies like Comcast, the communications company, Marriott, the hotel chain, Facebook, Google. All of these companies spend millions on the political donations. And they donate to both sides because it's in their corporate interest to do so and greasing the wheels and the rest of it. But the brand image is so bad. The other thing is that the local newspapers have turned against the Sedition Caucus. So you have the Texas newspapers who are hammering Ted Cruz, saying he should resign. The Missouri newspapers saying Josh Hawley should resign, that this is deplorable. And institutional Republicanism is coming after the Sedition Caucus because it's ideologically antithetical to everything they've ever convinced themselves they are, this sort of grasping, gross, rule-breaking mob kind of treason.
Well, we're going to see how it all plays out because on the 20th of January, Biden will be inaugurated, sworn in as President of the United States, and Trump will be pages in the history book, hopefully.
So where we are as we talk is that the Democrats have moved to they've moved what's called the 25th Amendment to the United States Constitution, gives the Congress the power to unseat a president if the president loses their mind, but that's got to be led by the vice president. And
Pence not going
to
do it.
And Pence has written a letter to Nancy Pelosi saying no, and Nancy Pelosi said, fine, we'll impeach him. And so the vote's being gathered on an impeachment. Yep. So that'll be amazing. The other thing that he lost, and we'll use this as a segue into what's going on in Australia, is that Trump was stripped of his Twitter account. Let's just put this in context. Most powerful man in the world has gone mad, has led a coup, still has the nuclear codes, but no longer has a Twitter account.
Or Facebook, for that matter.
And it's brought up a big discussion about the role of the social media platforms that have been facilitating people who have been organising treason and sedition, violent treason and sedition. And, of course, the discussion conservatives have decided is about censorship. Ben, what's been going on in Australia?
Well, I mean, in Australia, of course, we have a very conservative government with a very retrograde backbench. So while other conservative governments around the world were condemning Trump, condemning the
seditionists.
Like Boris Johnson, Trump's very good friend, Boris Johnson from the UK. Angela Merkel, who people in Australia may find hard to believe, but is actually a conservative. We're all saying that not only was this terrible, but Trump was responsible and he had to take responsibility for it. Scott Morrison came out and refused to say that Trump should take responsibility and just condemned the sort of acts of violence. At the same time, his backbench, George Christensen, Craig Kelly, who have been out there talking about the freedom of speech issues involved in this. And of course, they're tying it all up with Trump's insanity around COVID and denial of medical advice and continuing to push these fake news, these lies. Let's use real words here. These are lies. These are lies designed to garner votes and lies designed to scare people into disbelieving experts and the truth. And that's what Craig Kelly and George Christensen have been pushing.
Where do they do it?
They do it on Facebook. They do it on Facebook. They do it on Sky. These are the places they do it, but particularly they do it on social media. And they got called out. Morrison was asked the question.
By Paul Karp from The Guardian, who's an excellent journalist.
Excellent journalist. You know, do you think that George Christensen should take these things down? Do you think these things should be stopped?
Because they've been supporting the Trump electoral conspiracy theories. They've been pushing these on their social media platforms that the election was stolen. When we all know, established fact, votes counted at least three times in Georgia, Biden definitely won the election.
Biden won the election, right? So they've pushed these conspiracy theories. And Morrison's response was, there's freedom of speech in Australia and they'll continue to be. That's his response to his own members of government pushing foreign conspiracy theories on social media to large audiences. George Christensen and Craig Kelly might be backbenchers, but they have very large social media audiences. Some of them are from overseas, absolutely, but some of them are in Australia. And this is a foreign conspiracy theory that has just been used to incite violent acts of sedition against a democratically elected government. And Scott Morrison's response is, there's freedom of speech in Australia. The same Scott Morrison who has for the entirety of the, what is it now, nearly 8 years that the Liberal Party has been in power, has supported and actively pushed for the removal of Eureka flags from building sites, the removal of union stickers from helmets and from building sites around the country, and to punish any corporation that allows those things to happen by removing government contracts from their own portfolio. This is not about free speech.
But that's not the extent of the attempts on information suppression.
Oh, let's talk about journalists. Let's talk about what they've done to journalists and the ABC. Let's talk about the police raids on union officers, the police raids on journalists, some of whom work for fairly conservative mastheads, I must say, as well. This is not about freedom of speech. This has never been about freedom of speech. It is about control. It's about control of information and Scott Morrison using his backbench to push things that are designed to divide, designed to scare, designed to undermine people's faith in democratic institutions, undermine people's faith in experts, in science, in honest journalism. These are in institutions like unions, in institutions like our community organisations, like Amnesty International, which I'll come to in a minute because Michael McCormick, God help us, acting Prime Minister, has made some incredible comments in the last few days, which take this to a whole nother level. But this is not about freedom of speech. It's about control, it's about power, and it's about Morrison allowing these two people on his backbench, in his government,
to push conspiracy,
push foreign conspiracy theories.
It's interesting because Craig Kelly first came to national attention as the member for Hughes. Do you remember how? Do you remember what his complaint was?
Tell us what his complaint was, Van.
He wanted a painting taken down in Parliament House, a painting, I think it's a Wendy Becker painting, that depicts a scene from Macbeth by William Shakespeare because it had a figure in it who revealed their naked bum.
I mean,
so Mr. Freedom of Speech literally wants works of art that belong to the nation stripped from the walls because he's taken exception to a bum.
It's not about freedom of speech.
No, it's not.
And let's be really, really clear about this, because now Scott Morrison, unsurprisingly, has gone on holiday again.
I believe this is his fifth annual holiday in 18 months.
This might now be his sixth. It may have been fifth before this one. He seems to be on and off holiday. It's hard to tell.
I mean, the guy's been very busy. All that delegation of the responsibility for the, you know, lethal pandemic to the states. I mean, that would have been really exhausting getting other people to solve the problem.
Right. So Michael McCormick is now acting Prime Minister.
And he's the leader of the National Party, by the way, just in case you've never heard his name before.
And in 48 hours as acting Prime Minister, he has managed to completely throw outrage bombs the whole time. He's having a daily press conference, not to talk about COVID, not to talk about the economic recovery, not to talk about new job building programs, not even to talk about the cricket. He is just going out there to throw outrage bombs. So he started with refusing to condemn Trump. Just that's backing in the boss. You'd sort of expect that. Well, he did that. Then, of course, he moved to compare the violent insurrection of seditionists storming the US Capitol
with plans to kill the Speaker of the House and hang the Vice President.
Compared that to the Black Lives Matter protests in Washington, D.C., which, of course, they are not comparable. He went on to say that they're comparable because, well, all lives matter. And, you know, people dying is bad and violence is bad, but all lives matter. Now, we know that the All Lives Matter hashtag and the All Lives Matter sort of counterpunch, if you like, is in response to Black Lives Matter.
It's a dog whistle.
Yeah.
And it's a dog whistle that is about effectively saying, invalidating the Black Lives Matter movement. You don't have a right to complain. Shut up. Everything's going to stay the same way that it's always been.
So he's thrown that bomb. Amnesty International, who I mentioned before, have come out and said, stop trying to invalidate this movement. For hundreds of years, thousands of years, black people around the world have been oppressed, and Black Lives Matter is about saying that black lives matter too, and stop killing black people for trying to participate in society, economy, and political life.
With the equality that their birthright deserves.
That's right, as human beings. And he's, of course, oh, well, they've outraged and they're part of the outrage machine, and you'd expect that from the outrage machines. You know, they're just unhappy, they're unhappy, they're unhappy. He just goes on, right? He then calls the unemployed lounge lizards. Apparently the unemployed are lounge lizards and should get off the couch and stop watching Netflix and go out and pick fruit. Picking fruit is fun. Direct quote. Picking fruit is fun.
Now, Ben, you've picked a bit of fruit in your time. You grew up in the country. Is picking fruit fun?
Picking fruit is hard work. And look, I've never had to make my living picking fruit, thankfully. But we know that people are exploited in fruit picking. We know that people are paid as little as $3 an hour to pick fruit, which, frankly, is not enough to live off. So this is not about fun, right? This is not about people. As he put it, people have done really well out of Job Seeker.
Now, oh, they've done really well out of it because everybody loves being unemployed during a pandemic when they're all locked indoors and have no sense of social connection. That just really enhances the unemployed experience. No, Michael, what's happened with people in JobKeeper is some people have been able to temporarily, obviously temporarily because you've now rescinded it, get out of poverty.
And that's... He objects to that.
Clearly. He objects to people getting out of
poverty. All lives matter, but except for people who they can shove into poverty. And those people's lives obviously don't matter as much. You know, this
because
is
they
not,
don't find the fun in picking fruit.
No, this is not about... And by the way, there is unemployment in regional Australia as well.
Yeah, living in regional Australia, we know that quite well. If only there was a government willing to build structural opportunity. Oh, there is. Victorian government.
And telling people to relocate to a regional area where they'll have a seasonal job, not an ongoing job, but a seasonal job when they have no access to capital. I mean, there's so much wrong with it. It's just...
So why is McCormack doing this? Why does he throw the outrage bomb spin?
Oh, because it solidifies his tribal position, right? So he is the leader of the National Party. The National Party is primarily a party of upper middle class regional voters.
White people.
White people.
So upper middle class, regional white people who are traditionally conservative. You know, I'm sure we've been talking about a population like that recently, and I just can't remember where.
Yeah, funny that. So they are replicating the Trumpist approach. That's exactly what they're doing. He's not going to condemn Trump because he knows that actually he's going to use a lot of these Trumpian techniques to not only solidify his own base, but solidify his role as the tribal leader. You know, there's always talk in the press gallery about Barnaby Joyce making a comeback or somebody else leading the
Darren
Nationals.
Chester, who people Darren don't Chester. Pathologically hate.
Yeah, you know, who people call a country gentleman, I think one person described him as.
And also we know that there are the ructions, the rusted off phenomenon is happening to the National Party, where you've seen seats like Indi, traditional rural Liberals, traditionally a Liberal seat, but fell to independent Catherine McGowan, then was held by her successor, whose name escapes me at the moment, Helen Haines. And, of course, in Riverina, the state MP is another independent and he's a local doctor. So,
and Riverina is within, actually, McCormack's federal seat.
And within McCormack's federal seat. So it's interesting that there's this facilitation of, oh, let's destroy the truth and let's, you know, undermine the institutions that give us this facts we don't like. Because part of the criticism of Craig Kelly is that he's been spreading all the hydroxychloroquine nonsense and medical disinformation. And because he's a member of a government, that's pretty dangerous.
It's dangerous.
The AMA, the Australian Medical Association, not a communist organisation, has, you know, profiled and assisted the election of numerous Liberals, Liberal leaders. Brendan Nelson was Liberal leader for former president of the AMA, and they've come out and said Morrison's got to clamp down on this kind of stuff and medical misinformation is unbelievably dangerous. So it's sort of interesting that McCormack is putting himself in the defensive free speech camp, given the fact that locally there's quite a threat from the kind of professional people who have the status and trust of the community because of the institutions like medicine that they're involved.
And he does this all the time. You know, McCormack has consistently taken these retrograde views out into the public and aired them. And every time he's been made acting Prime Minister, he has used that platform not to do anything for the nation, not even to do anything for his own government that he's supposed to be part of, but to cement his own position as tribal leader. And that's all it's about. That's all it's ever been about with
Michael McCormack. Is Scott Morrison going to do anything about it?
Of course not. Scott Morrison could not be weaker. And let me give you a classic example. Malcolm Turnbull, who most people in Australia were very disappointed with as being Prime Minister, you know, there were some people who had pretty high hopes, some people who could call themselves progressive once upon a time, had high hopes for the Liberal Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, who had espoused all these great views about climate change and workers' rights, all sorts of things, and of course did none of it, and did none of it, and rolled over to his backbench all the time, like a puppy getting his belly scratched. And even Turnbull has come out and called Morrison a bit weak, a bit tepid.
What does it mean if jelly is calling you jelly?
I think it means you're jelly.
Yeah. So
this is the reality that we face now, right? Is that there will be this rear guard, reactionary response, people trying to shore up their own positions, people trying to make sure that they're speaking to their tribe. Thankfully, we've seen, as you say, the AMA come out. We've seen unions come out against this sort of idea that people should move out to the country and pick fruit for $3 an hour.
For 3 months of the year and then be stuck in small towns that have no infrastructure because the government won't build any.
We've seen the Labor Party condemn unequivocally the Trump
movement. It's been really
good
to see Albo be quite explicit about his condemnation of Trump. It's been really good and very popular online to see Labor MPs calling out the disinformation and specifically the medical disinformation and demanding that Morrison do something about Kelly and what's his face?
Christensen.
I love how it blanked out. And what that was good. Thank you, God.
And what they're pushing for, of course, is an inquiry into Facebook and Twitter and free speech, and it's all about free speech.
What the Conservatives are pushing.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, it's about their free speech.
And what's
so impeded when you are the government.
And what's important is that we don't fall into that trap. We keep the focus on the fact that actually there's nearly a million Australians unemployed and this government is not creating jobs for them.
No, Scott Morrison has failed a million people who are unemployed, and Scott Morrison has failed the medical establishment by allowing mistruths to undermine medical care during a pandemic. And this is the thing, you know, the vaccine hasn't been released in Australia yet, and we know that anti-vax information is a huge engine of disinformation online.
And what I want to do now, Van, is I think we want to end on some positive news.
Oh, I've got good news.
Tell us the good news.
It's about wood.
Yes, please tell us all
about it. It's about ply scrapers. So wood technology, and specifically plywood technology, has become very sophisticated, and we are now building skyscrapers out of plywood. And the reason why this is really good to build skyscrapers out of wood, and they've built one in Norway which is 25 stories high, like, it's incredible the engineering that goes into these buildings. We love them because they don't create the metal, concrete and glass heat effect and trap all that heat. The reason why Brisbane is 10 degrees higher than it should be is because it's a concrete pit. So wood doesn't do that. But also, the thing about wood is that we know that trees capture carbon. But when they die or when they burn, they release carbon. Yep. So a dead tree releases all of its carbon out. Timber is actually a carbon reservoir.
Yes.
So the idea of creating incentives for sustainable timber industries in construction for the building of skyscrapers is just amazing. At the same time, in Japan, they are using wood technology to make new satellites because there's a problem with space junk. Mm. All these satellites we've been sending up for decades up in orbit, smashing up, it's creating a lot of hazards. Like, it may limit our capacity for the safe operation of satellites because there's all these bits of garbage floating around there. So the Japanese are looking at wood to make satellites with because it's sustainable, that they can break it down if they need to and the rest of it. And it's just amazing. They're using a 400-year-old Japanese craft company and working with a Japanese astronaut to come up with this wooden satellite model. So the future is trees and the future is wood, and that makes me joyous.
And that's great news. Shout out to the CFMU Manufacturing Division, who I know have pushed this concept as well online quite a bit, that timber is one of the most sustainable ways of doing construction and should be encouraged and supported. So let's...
If we manage forestry, we get more forests.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a really, really great outcome.
Am I smiling?
You're smiling very much. That is The Week on Wednesday. You asked for longer episodes, and it is a longer one. Hopefully you will enjoy it. Hopefully you will share it. Hopefully you will talk about it with friends and family.
Hopefully there was no buzzsaw in the background this time.
Do subscribe. Subscribe on Podbean. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on Google Podcasts. However you'd like to subscribe, just subscribe. Love you, Vanny.
Oh, I love you, Benny.
Bye.
Bye.